C1SP. Number 4B.
And then it is as if she would turn the subject to spiritualism. Up to this point it was showing Christian Science, the standpoint of Christian Science, defining what are identities of being, the nature of the identities of being. And now she turns as if she would now explain what spiritualism calls identities of being. And I think the clue to it is one sees at once. Up to this point she was speaking from God's point of view. Mind maintains. Nothing is real but spirit. Soul is outside of finite form. You see, she was speaking from the synonymous terms. But now she turns it and says, but you. Now the term you comes in this paragraph 9 times. As if she would now say yes, but spiritualism relies on you, on our concept, on human concept, on the you, not on God. The definition which Mrs. Eddy gives in glossary of you is, she says, as applied to corporeality, a mortal. It's a mortal. But then she gives another definition and says, finitey. Did you say finitey?
Finity.
Finity. See. The moment something is built up in us from the human, from the you, it's always finite. It's always restricted. It always comes from a source which by its own definition is limited, finite, small, mortal, narrow. Whereas if one starts from God, the infinite one spirit, then one always has infinitude, infinity. So she says, close your eyes and you may dream that you see a flower and you touch and smell it. See, now it's the you. Before she didn't care about the you. She didn't care about finity. But now she takes in the spiritualistic point of view and says, well, how does the spiritualistic attitude in us consider the blade of grass to the star? And she shows that thus you learn that the flower is a product of the so-called mind, mind with a small m. That the human mind really produces these identities of being from the blade of grass to the star. They are a formation of thought rather than of matter. That they are a formation firstly by mind, then it is termed matter. Close your eyes again, and you may see landscapes, men and women. See, it's very agreeable. It's very romantic. You see, you just can close your eyes and you can see what you like to see. We close one eye and we like to see the Niagara fall. Another time we like to see a town or California or anything. We just can close your eyes and we just can see what we like, and we see it. And not only that, we can see things which doesn't exist neither on the sixth continent. We can make up whatever we like. We can see a man with six legs, and we can see a kangaroo flying instead of hopping, and we can see what we like. And the true revelators in the Bible, they really made use of that. They really made use of that. They had all sorts of visions, trying to symbolize spiritual ideas. But we usually, from the spiritualistic point of view, we just can see what we like. When I saw this chapter on spiritualism properly and rightly, I was healed of the belief that I should go and see the whole world. Right from my youth, I always wanted to go and see the world. Everything, when I think back, I always was leaning over the globe and the maps, and I wanted to go to this place and that place. And before I was 20, I went, I don't know to how many countries. I was counting them to how many countries I already have been, and I thought that's pretty good. So I had some thirst of seeing the world. The moment I have seen that whole chapter on spiritualism, I didn't have it anymore. I just don't want to move anymore. I have seen that I can see much more than that the whole geographical world can show me. Much more, million times bigger waterfalls, and bigger, million times more beautiful flowers and animals than material nature can show me. And what's the difference? What's the difference if I see an elephant with four legs or if I see an elephant with wings? What's the difference? What does it do? What is real about it? What are the real identities about it? And one begins to step beyond that concept that what mortal mind, what the physical senses see is reality. One sees that what the physical senses see are products of the human mind, and that we can make use of the human mind, and of mortal mind, and of the carnal mind, and of the esoteric mind, and of the sensational mind, and of the geographical mind, and of the biological mind, just as use as one likes to make use. Gives the world much bigger, million times more variety than what the real geographical world can show us. What's the use of it? Just fooling oneself in a realm which fundamentally is only the product of one's own thought. That's what he shows here. So you just can close your eyes and then open them again, and they have vanished. They are fleeting. You see, they are not identities which exist. They are fleeting identities. They are fleeting concepts. These things which are identified with the human mind are not living. They don't stay, they are fleeting, they go. You close your eyes and you see other ones and you open it and they are gone. You close your eyes and they another ones and you open them and they are gone. Well, what's it? Well, if we would do that with our everyday life, we would get really that happiness which marriage was promising us, the chapter on marriage. That we would go through this world of the mental and material realm and go through it untouched by what the human mind tells us, by what the physical senses perceive and conceive. And we will go through it on the basis of these first three paragraphs, namely that only the divine mind maintains that which is of the nature of idea, that only that which is of the nature of idea which I can deduce from the divine mind is real, and that that reality is never captured and kept captive in a material form, neither in the person, place, nor thing. What a freedom we would get. What a freedom. But spiritualism in us comes in and says we can produce and evolve material concepts and mental concepts ad libitum. Ad libitum. But then we must ask ourselves, well, what is real and what is unreal? And so she says, this shows us from dreams also you learn that therefore neither mortal mind nor matter is the image and likeness of God. That which with minds many we conceive is not that which the divine mind conceives. That which we call spirits is not spirit. That which we term as good and evil souls, and so many souls walking around, that is not soul. that they are not the likeness of mind, nor of spirit, nor of soul. So we can easily dispose of them. Easily dispose of them. And naturally, in practice, in helping people, we have to do that. That's the beginning. You see, all these chapters, they just build up and build up to the 12th chapter where we come to the Christian Science practice. These 11 chapters before are all necessary to be here to set our consciousness aright in order to help people. So this point here is not something which is left to us either to do or not to do. It's imperative that we rise in consciousness to accept the science of mind versus human hypothesis, versus that which the human mind builds up. So she comes in the next paragraph and takes this comparison and says, when the science of mind is understood, then spiritualism will be found mainly erroneous, having no scientific basis, therefore no scientific origin, no scientific proof nor power outside of human testimony. See what she says. She says, the science of mind has its authority in God. Has its authority in God. The spiritualism has its authority in human testimony, in us. She showed the science of mind as having its authority in God through the first three paragraphs, says the authority is that the divine mind maintains all that there is, that only that which is spiritual is something, everything which is not spiritual is nothing, and in the third paragraph showing that soul or the identity of everything is never in a form but always outside finite form, is always in principle. And that's the science of mind. That's the science of true formation. Against the false science of spirit, namely spiritualism, the science of human formation, which builds up on the you, on the human, on what we think and believe. It's a great, here at the first subject, she seems to be a great challenge between the standpoint that God takes and the standpoint that human takes, between God and we, between God, what God says, and you close your eyes, you may see, and you may believe, and you can smell and feel and touch in your dreams what's going on. See, all the senses in a dream, all the senses are awake, so to say. In a dream we can see, we can hear, we can touch, we can smell. Have you ever smelled in a dream? Yeah, I think you have. See, all the senses can be awakened. Well, who does it? It's always the human mortal mind. So, its offspring, spiritualism is the offspring of the physical senses. There is no sensuality in spirit. I could never believe in spiritualism, she says. And then, having shown that, you see, having shown the principle of the science of spirit versus the human standpoint of spiritualism, she naturally then says, well, then the whole structure which spiritualism can build up must be something which is as finite and as limited as its source, as the human. Therefore, the basis and structure of spiritualism are alike material and physical. Its spirits are so many corporealities, limited and finite in character and quality. We get here really the false individuality of spiritualism. The individuality of Christian Science is infinite, is wide, is full, has a fullness of character, has a fullness of qualities, a fullness of ability, whereas the counterfeit of it is that if we build up a universe, then we build it up on a finite basis, namely on a finite human mind, we build it up on that finity of matter, the limitation of matter, and we build it up on the finity of corporeal sense. Naturally, the outcome of it is a limited individuality. It's a limited individuality, just as a mortal is, see, just as a mortal is, because the creation of a mortal is a spiritualistic belief that we can put life into matter. And therefore, the mortal itself is really what she depicts here. So many corporealities, limited and finite in character and quality. That's why we needed in the chapter on marriage yesterday the tone of truth to liberate us from the matrix of mortality, to liberate us from the belief in birth. And here now we will see that she shows not only have we to liberate us from the belief in birth, but also from the belief in death. Spiritualism therefore presupposes a spirit which is ever infinite to be a corporeal being, a finite form, you see. Instead of having the form of the Son of God, the form of the stature and fullness of the Christ, spiritualism builds up man as a corporeal being, as a finite form, and says, as the clue says, a theory contrary to Christian science. She now makes a clear distinction. You see, the analysis is finished now. It has analyzed how science, Christian science, builds up reality, and how spiritualism builds up the belief of things, and now analyzes it at the end and says they are completely opposite. They are contradictions. They are contrary to each other. So, this is the end of the first subject. But we can see, I think you've got now the touch of what she is trying to show here. Namely, that fundamentally we are all spiritualists. All spiritualists. We may not be spiritists in the sense of the cult of spiritism, but fundamentally we are dualists, and so we are spiritualists, believing, falling back, always back into the belief that things are real, that things like a blade of grass in the field up to the star in the skies, that they are formations of God, that in them is life, and that in them is reality, and identity, and existence. Whereas we begin to learn that they are mental concepts, just as in our night dreams we can produce and evolve mental concepts which to us appear not as mental, but as things, as material, and therefore and are invested with all the testimonies of the physical senses. We can see them, hear them, touch them, smell them. What is the fifth?
Taste them.
Wouldn't be a bad thing to dream about a chicken now. A roast chicken, I mean. I have given myself away now. So we can do all that, you see. And so it is laid bare, really, that fundamentally we must base ourselves on the one mind and not divide the one mind into minds. We must base ourselves fundamentally on one spirit, and not divide them into spirits, people, many. But fundamentally, we must see that there is only one soul identifying itself only spiritually. Therefore, there are not many souls, men and women. That there fundamentally there is one being manifesting and expressing and interpreting itself always as spirit, as a spiritual being, and never as corporeal personalities, men and women, and things. So spiritualism really is here shown how, let me quickly show how in this subject she shows how spiritualism constructs itself. See what the belief is, how spiritualism builds itself up. It says first that it relies on the human mind or a mortal mind, which forms and evolves images. Then second, it says that these evolved images appear to be independent material, independent of the human mind, forms of matter. When we dream, we never think that the trees and the flowers and the things we see were created by us. They appear as independent of the human mind, therefore as being material, independent identities. And then they are invested with all the physical senses. Then we begin to see that their authority, that their underlying principle, that their authority is not God, but the human mind, the human testimony, that which we as authority produce and give and invest. And therefore, that everything that comes out of a limited human testimony must therefore also be of the same nature. Therefore, its spirits are as limited and finite as the producer. They are limited, finite in character and in ability and in everything. And they appear not as the infinite form, as the infinite manhood in the structure of Christ-likeness, but always as finite form, pantheism. We create pantheism. Spiritualism creates pantheism. And so, finally, we see that we arrive at the very opposite of what reality really is, namely monotheism and monism. It is therefore showing the big difference between the world of reality, namely the world of spirit, and our world in which we live. Our world which we build up. Our world in which we believe. We believe in a world of fear and hate and disaster and war and so on. We believe in a world peopled with corporeal identities, finite in character. We believe in corporeal personalities which express and interpret good and evil. We believe in that. It's our world. And therefore, Jesus could say, I'm not from this world. He didn't want to be a spiritualist. And here we are asked to come out of this world and to see that the world in which we live as humans is not God's universe. And that in consciousness we can easily rise out of this humanly mental universe and to live in the universe of the divine mind.